Hello, listeners, and hello, Will.
Hi, Rohan.
We're in for a treat today.
We are indeed. So, I can't remember, I think we were on a trip when this first came out.
I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting for this episode for months.
So I told everyone that I, whenever I live in a place for a prolonged period of time, I generate a plan of action, plan of defense, should there be a zombie apocalypse whilst I'm living there. Which I had thought was a pretty normal thing to do, but everyone else found it quite entertaining. And what we thought we'd do today is basically, I'm going to take you through a couple of the principles,
sure,
which are important to be keeping in mind, how to, this could be a whole how-to series, yeah, on zombie-proofing your home. That'd be great.
But I guess before we get started, Will, I mean, I'm sure the question on many listeners' mind is, why?
Why?
Why have a plan? Is this something you see coming up?
So I watch, I quite enjoy sort of zombie related films and TV shows.
But do you believe in zombies?
Actually, it's something interesting that I'll talk about later. But I don't think in the way that films and TV present it, that a zombie apocalypse could really happen.
Right.
Different films and TV shows like have different causes for it.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I don't think you would have someone who, even if you had a system to hijack the human brain,
mm-hmm,
I don't think it would have the coordination to be able to run at you, basically. I think it could probably move very slowly and like sort of shuffle, but I think it would be very difficult for a...
Interesting.
For a,
I would counteract that point.
Yeah?
Based on evidence that's already present in the animal kingdom.
Okay.
Which you may already have heard of.
So yeah.
It's the parasite.
You stole my fact.
Okay.
No, go ahead. We can talk about it now. Yeah, go ahead.
So there's a parasite called, I think the name is Ophiocordyceps, you know, lateralis.
Mm-hmm.
Or lateralis if you're from the north. But essentially, it's a fungus, but it's a fungus that essentially takes over. So it's a parasite,
yeah,
parasitic fungus, which,
yeah,
when it infects the host, it takes over their motor functions.
Mm.
And essentially the plan is that it makes them go to a location, plant themselves in that location. So a common example is like an ant.
Mm.
Infects the ant, takes over the ant, controls all its motor systems, make it climb up a tree really high up, latch itself to the tree, and then the ant just stays there doing nothing else. And
yep,
then, as very much horror movie-esque,
it grows
from the ant,
yeah,
until it becomes a ball of spores, which then explode and then go and
catch
onto
more
infect
ants. So I don't think and this is where I sort of think you could maybe do very limited motion, but I don't think those ants that are infected are sort of wandering about like normal ants.
Yeah.
I think they're very...
Right.
Limited in their motion. And also,
okay,
there is a significant difference between an ant brain and a person brain.
Yeah. But I mean obviously there is, but the kind of area of the brain that you'd have to take over, you wouldn't have to take over the prefrontal cortex of it. It would just be the motor cortex, which is actually fairly commonly conserved across species.
And I suppose hypothetically as well, obviously the fungus is limited.
Mm.
You could develop a super fungus or a, you know, super nanotechnology which could do it. But if you were doing a nanotechnology, it would have to be self-replicating and would have to, you know, on zombie lines, be transferable via bite.
Yeah.
Or something.
I
think the ability to hijack someone's brain is not impossible. You know, they use... transcranial stimulation already.
Yep.
They can make you flick your finger or whatever it is.
Mm.
So that's not too foreign. And obviously there's the fungus thing as well. So that happens. But I think combining that into a global disaster situation where society collapses, I think is a bit far-fetched for me. Never say never. Could happen.
Yeah, sure. But do you not think if people were just... half the population was suddenly infected with this thing, and that would cause a catastrophe, I think.
Yes, but half the population would have to get infected by it.
But if it was sporulent and virulent and in the airborne kind of environment, it's reasonable. I mean, COVID's probably shown that's quite possible.
I suppose, like, but and you'd also need it. It would need to be dormant in people for a really long time before before activating itself. Because one of the, it's weird to talk about pathogens like having problems, and the problem being not being able to cause enough damage. But some problems that really dangerous pathogens have is that they are too dangerous, and so they don't get passed on.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we talk about this in immunology, but the concept of, it's not in the pathogen's interest. It's not in a virus's interest to cause you harm.
Yeah.
Unless the harm directly results in either growth or propagation of that virus. So the reason, like, lots of rhinoviruses and coronaviruses will cause, not just COVID, but just general, or most of these respiratory viruses will cause people to cough, is because that's how
it gets it out.
The same for GI, the diarrhea allows you to kind of spread it quicker. The reason things like mosquito and malaria aren't as, they're not infectious diseases. They are in, well, they are infectious. They're not infective diseases.
Yeah.
So it's not in the pathogen's interest. And if it causes you to die too quickly, then actually, if you die, then the pathogen dies with
it. Yeah. But yeah, so I suppose it's not, I don't do it in terms of, because I think there might be one.
Right.
Definitely not in my, not in my lifetime.
Okay. So is it to leave a legacy? For...
It's just because I find it fun, more than anything.
Okay. It's a recreational activity rather than...
purely recreational.
As opposed to something self-preserved. Because yeah, it would make more sense to have a meteor plan or an earthquake plan or a hurricane plan, for example, than a zombie.
Well, I haven't planned for any of those.
Or a tsunami plan, for instance.
But I also say, because you do have, there's quite a culture, I think, in the US of like doomsday preparation, and they have big bunkers where they have lots of food. And again, this isn't that. It's not a matter of, well, the solution is build a bunker. The solution is, if it just happens and you weren't ready, you weren't expecting it, what do you need to do? Yeah. So one key principle that I see in films and shows about zombies is, some people are very much, I'm going to go it alone. If it's just me, then I'm not held back by anyone. There's no risk. You know, I'm going to survive better if I'm on my own. Then there's the other school, which is, you know, numbers is power. More is better. We'll survive longer if we're working together.
Yeah, I'm sure there's countless. The one that comes to mind for me is, I don't know if you've played this game. It's called The Last of Us.
I have played The Last of Us. Yes, yeah. Not Last of Us 2.
Oh, yeah. I'll keep shush then. But Last of Us is a fantastic game. And actually, the plot on that is based on Orpheo called Cordyceps.
Fungus.
So
they're quite fungusy, aren't they?
Yeah, the premise is the fungus develops a human variant as well, which can then go on to infect people. And then they turn into these fungusy kind of humans which can walk around and use sonar to echolocate humans.
So
even if they are walking slower, they're not that much slower. And then a single bite can transmit the fungus.
Passes it on. Yeah.
But they both schools of thought are demonstrating in that game this.
And that's usually, you do see that in any show or game. There's usually, and it might be that the protagonist is the one who's on their own, or the protagonist is the one who's in a group. And actually, and I guess it just depends on the way they want to tell their story, which one they choose. Now, I am very much in the numbers camp.
Right.
I think being a lone wolf is just very, very risky. And I think actually it might work for a very, very small proportion of the population, but the likelihood of me falling within that category is very, very small. So one of the principles that I sort of think about when I'm looking at wherever I'm living, and I'm thinking, you know, if zombie apocalypse happened now, what would I do? Is you need to try and maximize space. It's a compromise between space and safety. So ideally you want a perimeter which is as safe as possible. So you know that when you're inside that space, you are safe. Okay. So when I was growing up, my family home had, there were sort of a couple different sections to the garden.
Okay.
And one had like a wall around it with a gate, and the other had a fence. So one of the things that I'd actually do is we'd lose the fenced section and just keep the walled section, because actually it's going to be much more difficult to defend the fenced section than it is the walled section. So whilst we're losing space, mm-hmm. we're maximizing safety. And garden and land is important, because if we're doing this long term, we're going to need to be growing some crops.
Right.
So outside space is really, really important. You wouldn't want to be locked up in a big like office tower, because whilst office towers, obviously being higher, present their own benefits, the potential for growing stuff is very limited. You can go on the roof and, you know, do stuff there, but that's usually quite a small space.
This is really interesting, because recently I was asked a very similar question, which is, what would you do if the purge is going to be announced in 10 minutes? What would you do? And I was just in a residential house at that point. And I wondered, because if it's 24 hours, all I would want to do is just lock up and barricade myself in the top of a flat with as much, you know, essentially put as many barriers up as possible and just wait out the 24 hours. But if that 24 hours turns into a week, your appetite for that drops. And if it turns that week turns into a month or a year, there's no way you would do that, because you would obviously just starve very quickly.
Yep.
So there is a trade-off between outdoor space and the ability to get rations and supplies versus being able to
wait it out. Outdoor space is more risky, but actually you're only going to be able to scavenge for so long. You can scavenge for a while. Scavenging is risky, and you'll have to do it in either scenario. But ultimately, you want to move away from relying on scavenging as soon as possible.
What kind of things would you grow?
So, basically stuff that is easy to grow in the place that you are. So, we actually, you'll find this quite funny. So, the garden has quite a lot of fruit trees.
Why is that funny, Will?
So, it's funny because whilst that might be very helpful for other people, I don't really eat any fruit, so there'd be lots of food for the other people there, but I'd have to grow other stuff.
When was the last time you had a piece of fruit?
So I had some olives yesterday evening. I know no one ever accepts that as a substitute. The last time I had fruit...
Apart from olives.
Apart from olives, and apart from, like, if you have... I guess I had a slice of tomato in a burger last weekend.
I'm not sure tomato. I know it's strictly a fruit, but
definitely a fruit.
It's not considered by the public to be a fruit.
Beyond that, I would have to hazard never.
Never? Not even as a child?
Don't think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about fruit pastels?
No, I never ate sweets either. So all the kind of those kind of things. I assume fruit pastels fruit are juice. Sweet. No.
What about those chocolates I got you? That was shaped like
fruit. Those tasted like chocolate, unsurprisingly.
Should have got one of them that actually was fruit.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah.
Okay, so back to now you've learned a very interesting thing about wilderness. So you've got fruit trees in the garden.
So there's fruit, and then also you'd be growing basically the hardiest stuff you can. Like leafy veg is actually doesn't grow very well in our garden because it just gets attacked by insects.
Right.
So root stuff is probably best because they're relatively high energy. So I'm not a professional gardener or nutritionist, but my instinct is root veg is a pretty good go-to.
Yeah, I think you read the book Martian.
No.
So it's just about a chap who goes. So it's a team visiting Mars. One of them gets stranded.
Is there a film about?
There was a film. Okay. Damon. Okay. He gets stranded and he essentially uses, his own manure to make potatoes and grow potatoes. And the reason is it's hardy, but more importantly, it's extremely high calorific compared to some other crops you can get. Tomatoes aren't that nutritious. I mean, they're nutritional, but they're not nutritious.
Okay.
Whereas potatoes are.
Yeah.
It's probably why, you know, potatoes and rice is probably why India and such China have ended up growing to such high populations in a relatively small piece of land.
Yeah, definitely. But also, so it's fine. So I said there's a bit of a trade-off because we sacrifice that space of garden for more safety because the wall is more defendable. But actually, there's also a longer-term plan to then reclaim that space. Because what
would you need to do that?
So ultimately, whenever you see these kind of things happen, there's always
never. I've never seen this happen.
You know, every now and again, see the old zombie apocalypse. But when you see it in the films, there's always the first few weeks is always the most carnage.
Yeah.
Right. That's where the most things go wrong. And so actually, what you want to do is make sure that you're maximizing protection for those first few weeks. Whilst also you want to try and maximize capacity. You want whatever base you have, you want it to be able to have the most capacity for the most people. Because the more people you take on, the more hands you have, the more work you can do. And actually, when there's four of you, this is going to sound quite cynical, but it's a tragedy and also screws everything up if one of you gets got. Because if there's 20 of you, if one of you gets got, yes, it's very sad, but actually it doesn't necessarily, you've not lost 25% of your manpower. So you want to try and maximize indoor space and outside space without maximizing risk.
Yeah.
So you basically need to think, what perimeter is the most defendable around the property that I live in? And you might actually think, well, my property isn't very defendable. So what I think I would have to do is, but there's something, you know, there's a school or there's something nearby which is way more defendable. And so what I would actually, my plan would be to shift as quickly as possible over there and then set everything up. So using the example of where I grew up, if you go beyond that fenced garden, just beyond it is the church car park. So there's a church hall, there's a car park, and that is walled as well.
Right.
So once...
Very convenient.
It's so convenient, all these walls. But once you know, the first few weeks have died down and we're thinking of trying to expand to try and maximize how much space we have, I wouldn't actually push forward just to the fence of the garden.
Yeah.
I push beyond that to the wall of the car park.
Farming outside your walls.
So, I mean, at that point, land law means nothing.
There's a lot of assumptions here. The first of which is things are going to calm down after a few weeks.
So they're not going to, obviously it's not going to be calm,
right.
But it's going to be relatively less chaotic.
Okay.
It's still going to be very difficult, but you'll have gotten over the initial panic of there's a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
You'll have gotten over the initial issue of, you know, everyone's dying. And hopefully you've been able to take on a few more people. I also believe in the importance of using... obviously, it's very different. All the zombie films are in America. And they all have tons and tons of guns. It's just like, oh no, zombie apocalypse. Get out all my shotguns. Whereas we don't have that in the UK. Yeah. So there's going to be a heavy...
Thankfully, the zombies don't have them. But I suppose that they rarely use guns.
I definitely draw the line at fungus control zombies who can pull triggers.
It's only like very elite level zombies that seem to use tools.
Really. Use tools, yeah, yeah. But the equivalent that we have in the UK is garden tools.
Sure.
So
I think they have garden tools in America. Oh, it's superseded by the guns.
Guns are generally better than a pitchfork, but we don't have that.
And in folklore, the only way you can kill a zombie is by...
Through the brain
or
decapitate. Yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, so pitchfork... Pretty pointy, through the head.
Right.
If you've got an axe, we had an axe for chopping wood. Watch.
Probably put a violent disclosure warning.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. If zombies cause you anxiety,
it's a bit late now.
Yeah, it's too late. We'll sally forward. That there are a few different things that you're thinking about. One is space and land. Two is capacity for more people. Three is capacity to defend yourself. And the fourth is defense. And I sort of see capacity to defend and defense as slightly different.
Oh, okay.
So capacity to defend yourself is a bit more weapon and manpower related, whereas defense is more structurally and environmentally. So, for example, the garden has a nice wall all the way around it. That goes into the house. And then the way to the front door, because it's on a slight hill... The main body of the house is higher than the road outside the front. So actually, you go down steps to get to the front door to leave. I would just barricade that. I would throw loads of rubbish and stuff down there and just write it off.
Okay.
And have that as a immovable. You can't get through this, basically.
Yeah.
because that would be quite a... You want to have as few points of entry as possible.
Right.
You want to ideally just have one person able to guard one thing, and that's it. Now, that's really difficult to just have one person guarding it.
What about windows and things? Obviously, people can just break those.
So that is true. You do see a lot of boarding up windows. My house is actually sort of split into two houses.
Okay.
And so the windows don't actually go into my house. But you might think, actually, if we want to maximize capacity, we might want to knock through into that other... into the rest of the house to be able to do that.
Would you grow the crops inside the house?
In the garden.
Right, but not inside the house because there would be no sunlight, presumably.
Yeah, there's no sun. So we have a greenhouse, and the garden itself is relatively spacious. Obviously, most gardens these days are like mostly lawn.
Yeah.
So that would have to be all, you know, pulled up.
And I guess you have to account for things that we just take for granted, like running water, electricity. So
you need to... One of the first things you want to do is setting up a water collection tank.
Oh, I see.
Because
I'm glad you thought all this through.
Well, the problem is you can't guarantee that the water supply is going to stay clean. You know.
So would you just run the tap to get as much water right from the start as possible?
That's a good point, actually. So I guess, you know, if you've got a boiler, you know that if as soon as the water goes rancid from the tap, you know you've got a boiler full of water to keep yourself safe. I hadn't thought about running the tap and sort of storing it somewhere, but that could definitely be a possibility. But I think you do just need an area in the garden where you've got a big, not a net, but some kind of big cone to then filter in. Because like I said, there's been shows where, oh no, a zombie's fallen into the whatever it is, the pipes, and now the water's all zombie infecty.
Yeah.
So you do need to be careful of that. Obviously, our plumbing is subterranean.
Sure.
So you'd hope that it's fine, but actually, you know, I don't know where my Thames water comes from. If there's a reservoir filled with zombie bodies, probably not great.
No, that's true. The reason I bring this up is when I was growing up, I grew up in a desert. So I grew up in Jaipur, which is like the capital of Rajasthan in India. And as you can imagine, a very hot place, very dry place. We were in the middle of a drought, and they elected to reduce. So we take 24 hours for granted in the UK, but actually in India, in Rajasthan, we only got 1 hour of fresh water every day.
Okay.
Now, if you were rich, you would just have tankers where you just store the water. But during the drought, they reduced that from 1 hour to half an hour.
Okay.
And not only that, they moved the time slot from 7 a.m. to 5 a.m.
Okay.
So you only had running water for half an hour.
Yeah.
And you may think, God, like that'll do it. That'll definitely reduce water consumption. But actually, water consumption went up because it caused a mass hysteria.
Panic. Yeah.
Everyone started doing even people who didn't have official tankers and water storage places. They literally got buckets and just started like running it. So actually, water consumption went up in that period rather than down.
Yeah. But I guess that's quite a strange way of rationing something.
Yeah.
Not by quantity, but by time that you run the tap.
Yeah.
Whereas the alternative is to say each of you gets one medium-sized bucket of water or whatever it is.
Jerry can, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Water is a big concern. So water, food and protection are the main things. Ultimately, I think electricity you'll have to use, but be aware that it will run out. And at that point, you're just going to have to...
What kind of things would you do in the first 24 hours with that electricity?
So I think certainly in the first 24 hours, it would be very much a... So one thing that I find interesting about zombie apocalypse is the point where everyone agrees that it's okay to kill them. Because actually...
You mean the point from which people agree, or just everyone straight away is like implicitly agreed?
No. So yeah, there must be a tipping point, right?
Sure.
Because if you were wondering about... You wouldn't necessarily know. There's no klaxon saying zombie apocalypse starting. If you want, it's so unhelpful.
I've actually, it was the strangest thing. I think I told you, I met the transport secretary, Grant Shapps.
Okay.
On Christmas Day last year, in fact.
Are you going to tell me there is a klaxon to say zombie apocalypse starting?
But what I found out he could do, and hopefully this doesn't come back to bite me. I found out that, you know, all the signs you see on the motorway which say like junction 4 traffic ahead and 10 minute delay on the M1 in this junction, or stay at home, COVID, and
turns
out he can control them all from his laptop.
Wow.
And I just wonder what kind of
all chaos. It takes.
Well, he could declare a zombie apocalypse, run for the hills or something.
That'd be really good. That'd be really good.
So he could cause one inadvertently. I mean, not inadvertently, but he has the power to cause one.
Yeah,
a single man.
But wow, what a position. But yes, so let's say just something zombie-like starts running at you.
Yeah.
You wouldn't instinctively be like, I can kill that person.
Right, you would run away.
You'd run away and be like, what the hell is going on? And then you'd see it happening more and more.
Sure.
But there's still no, you know, maybe people are just being really unreasonable these days. It's just an epidemic of unreasonable people. So there's...
Yeah, there could be some drug that everyone's been injected with, which is causing temporal... temporary...
And actually, because you don't want to... Because if you kill this person, if it is a zombie apocalypse,
then fair.
Well done. But if it's not,
then you go
you're in jail.
Yeah.
So there's a tipping point, and I don't think that happens for the first few days.
Really?
So in the first day, I would definitely be strapped into pretty much every news channel I could. Because obviously communication is going to go down. That's one of the things that happens. So you want to make sure that you know as much as you can.
Why is that? Why does because radio shouldn't go down.
But it's just the producers of the radio.
Right. The official radio, like BBC One, would, for example, go down.
Yeah, yeah. So
like a random...
Anyone with a
salvage radio.
Yeah, yeah. That could still happen. Like typical streams of news, which we rely on, would presumably half of them get zombified, so the production stops. So what I want to do is try and consume as much information about what is going on. Basically, if you suspect zombie apocalypse, first thing you do is enact your initial defense plan. So I would run out, sort of gate up the wall, make sure that those gates are reinforced, and blockade that door.
Sure.
Whilst I've got the news going on saying, we've just heard that Japan has completely... We've lost contact with Japan. They are now under control of, the zombie.
Zombie overlord, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you want to have that information coming through as much as possible, because you'll lose that.
I guess no government would ever, at least within 24 hours, say, go and exterminate every zombie that you see. Right? Like that was, they would never announce that on like national television.
I would be surprised, yeah.
Whereas, of course, there must come a point when
actually
that becomes official government policy.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's unlikely to happen within 24, 48 hours is what you're saying, which seems reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you'd hope a rational government would try and at least see...
Well, if work zombies out what's happening first.
Yeah, and more importantly, if zombification could be reversed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, if imagine COVID turned people into zombies within 3 months. It would be quite irrational government to then say anyone who has COVID, kill them right on
the spot. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Imagine if, I've been reading about long COVID. Imagine if long COVID was actually, you just turned into a zombie. Yeah.
That's
good thing I'm prepared. but
it would also kill most of the population at that point as well.
That is true, that is true. But yeah, so you want to make sure that you know what's going on. And I'd also spend the early time trying to get as many people into the house as possible. Neighbours, friends, I'd sort of be ringing them all up. People just, anyone nearby, maybe even have like go outside with a loudspeaker saying, look guys, things are going bad, come over here. You know, we've got space for 10 more people. We've got space to grow food and stuff.
I'd be quite suspicious if someone said that to me. I mean, obviously, if you're in strife, you would just accept it, but...
I think also in the first few days... So obviously, in zombie shows, there are these suddenly 1 month of zombies happening, and now there are these big criminal, like, bandit gangs. Whilst I'm sure that could happen, I find that difficult to believe, but also a couple days in... I think
be very organised crime. Yeah. Super organised, super prepared.
We've got everything sorted. Yeah, so I think I'd want to try and get as many people in, because obviously, my family's relatively large. There's about 6 of us.
Yeah.
But actually, if you were in zombie mode, there's a lot of floor space for a lot more people.
Sure. Sure.
And again, like I said, you want as many people as possible involved and on your team, because even if there is a bandit gang, there's four of them and there's 30 of you. It's going to go
your way. It's the same as like a height. Gazelles won't get picked off if they're part of the pack, or much less likely to.
Is there anything else? I mean, I guess the only other thing is like cooking, because eventually you'll lose that, but heat, ultimately
resources.
So I was talking about trying to minimize scavenging. You are going to have to scavenge.
What kind of thing would you scavenge?
So I think like a lot of long-lasting food. So like dry pasta.
Would you kind of just raid the supermarkets and loot them, essentially?
I think actually, so what I'd want to do is, if you have like circumferences around your house, I'd want to use up, I wouldn't want to go too close too soon, because you want actually to be able to have nearby supplies in an emergency.
But what if everyone else loots those nearby supplies?
That's just, that applies anywhere.
Right.
But so you wouldn't want to be going out, because there's a very large Tesco's sort of a bit of a drive away. I don't think you'd want to be going very far. I think you'd want to be going only by foot.
I kind of get it. It's a bit like when you're playing Age of Empires.
Mm.
And if you play against like a really aggressive enemy who are going to raid you, then it's better to leave your like starting hunt in your base and actually
take
start.
The one first, and take then the fire
and come back. So I kind of get it.
So I definitely wouldn't raid next door, because whatever supplies next door has, I'd want to keep there. Or actually, if I was to raid next door, I'd take all the perishable stuff.
Sure.
Leave all the non-perishables. But also things like fuel. So gas, I think, would be really important. Keep the barbecue going during zombie season. So in zombie things as well, there's always like, we need medicine. That's often a concern. Now, truthfully, that's not really something that I've thought about too much. Because I don't really, I sort of feel like the medicine you need is really unlikely that if you go to the supermarket, they're going to have exactly the kind of thing that you're looking for. If it's a really serious issue, you know, if someone looks like they're about to die, it's really unlikely that you can go into Tesco's and be like, they had the medicine.
Sure, you'd need to go to a tertiary or a hospital, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose, so if you're listening to this and you're thinking, actually, I think where I live is really not very defendable. If you're thinking about moving to a more defendable place, one of the things that you might want to think about is, well, what does that have access to?
What the local amenities?
Exactly. If you're going to be moving, then you may as well move to somewhere which is very close to a hospital. Now, I personally think, so you also see in films and shows about like people moving all the way across the US or something like that. I think it's really risky to be traveling. I think you want to make a camp and work on it and build it as much as possible.
Doesn't it make more sense, Will, to have a four-wheel drive go in the middle of Wales or Scotland, far away from any civilization? Zombies are very unlikely to get there, and then just set up camp there.
Potentially, but I think that journey is going to be a very big risk.
What if you make that a couple of weeks in, when carnage is subsided?
Potentially, I mean, you know, roads are likely going to be blocked, so that's why you said four-wheel drive, but still, it's going to be tricky.
Fuel, I suppose, would be quite a big restricting thing as well.
But presumably gas stations, they've got a certain reserve of fuel in them. So again, if you do it in a few weeks' time, I doubt that will be used up, but a year in, maybe. I think also, it depends on, so if you're saying go on your own, I just think that's risky. I think if you go, even if you're in the wilderness completely, you know, not surrounded, if you take a weird tumble and sprain your ankle,
that's you done for.
You're done. It's going to be really difficult to then carry on. And that can happen so easily. if you're going to take four of you over in the car, then I guess that makes sense. But you also have the risk that if you are in the middle of nowhere, you can't scavenge. So let's say the crops don't go so well.
Yeah.
First time around, which might happen. Yeah. You can't then go in and get all the dried pasta from next door to make up for it. I don't think you want to be in the middle of a city. I don't think you want to be necessarily in the middle of nowhere. Like, people often say, like, oh, we'll go on a farm. But farms are not defendable. Like, really, it's just completely open perimeter most of the time.
Yeah.
And actually, you don't know how, like, zombie dynamics will work.
Yeah.
Because they could end up anywhere. You often see them hoarding, so they might all group together, but they might all stay separate.
Yeah.
If they are grouping together and they go through a farm, you're screwed.
Right.
There's nothing you can really do. You'd have to leave. You'd have to run away.
There's often, we talk a lot about how to kill zombies, but one of the things that seems to come up quite frequently in the films is fire.
Mm-hmm.
The fire seems to be a good deterrent and a good tool to have, but obviously to create a fire for most people, I mean, if I told you now create fire in the next half, you'd just try, so would I, we'd both struggle with, obviously, you know, having access to an artificial lighter or something.
Yes, that does help.
But if we were trying to create from like sticks and stones, that's incredibly difficult.
Yeah, and I guess this is where well, I suppose you could have a fire which never goes out. So you could have like a
but then that gives you away.
So another thing is, how do the zombies perceive? Are they mostly smell-based or sound-based or vision-based?
Right.
And actually, that's not something that you'll know Not until, like, a while in. And different films and TV shows do things differently. So you might actually have a setup which is ideal for one kind of zombie,
right,
but not for another, which is tricky.
So do you have a variant for the three types of scenarios you've described?
So I think ultimately the layout of the what I'd do and like the perimeter of what I'd want to defend, I think would stay broadly the same. Because ultimately, again, if the walls are higher than the zombie, then there's not much that they'll be able to do. You do see, I mean, in World War Z, they had that pretty terrifying thing where they're all clambering on top of each other. But I lived in Surrey, so, you know, slightly lower population than... where was that scene? I can't remember, but it was a big city. So you're kind of relying on there not being too many zombies around. Again, if you're living in a city, then you might have to travel out. There might be something that you have to do. In terms of how you behave, what you do differently, I think it would just be purely a behavioural thing. If you have to be silent, then you'd be silent. If they're vision-based, then actually you having walls all around you is pretty good. If they're smell-based, then that's probably the hardest one to roll combat.
Around in mud.
So you could roll around in mud, and what you do see, there was another one where they got a dead zombie and sort of rubbed it all over them, which I thought was pretty gross.
That is pretty gross.
But it seemed to work.
Okay.
They then just walked through the whole horde. And I suppose you could say, well, what I'll do actually is I'll just go on my own, rub myself in zombie guts, and I'll be fine. But I think it depends on what kind of life you want after. Because if you're fine with that, great. But I think I'd potentially rather not make it than have to constantly live in zombie guts. But so the idea of the way I do it is to try and maintain as good a lifestyle as possible while staying safe.
Ideally, you just swim out to a random virgin island or something, right? Because zombies aren't meant to be able to swim, is the other thing.
So yes, allegedly. And there's also the argument of, well,
I mean, I don't understand why they wouldn't be able to swim if they can walk. They can swim, surely.
I mean, yeah, definitely. So in some films, they can only walk slowly, though. And I think if you swim slowly, you often sink. But presumably, they don't need to breathe, so they can just walk underwater.
I mean, the physiology of zombies does irk me because they seem to not obey the laws of conservation of energy and mass.
There is also that, yeah.
So there would obviously be, I always get a bit annoyed about the movie writers ignoring science.
So I guess the solution would be to say, if there's a zombie that is made, it could only last on whatever reserves the body has. I know they often say you can go without food for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's the rule of three. It's 3 minutes without oxygen, 3 minutes without, 3 days without water, three weeks without food. Depends on how, on your reserves, of course.
Yeah,
generally that's true for most.
But then actually, if it's just 3 weeks that you've got to be worried, that's not too bad.
Yeah, so actually you should just, unless they're just feasting on other zombies.
Oh yeah, they do take chunks out of the people, but then they become a zombie with less them. So presumably have less energy.
Who becomes a zombie? The original.
So zombie one bites person one.
Yeah.
And bites during the biting eats about 20% of person one.
Yeah.
So zombie one then becomes 120% full.
Yeah.
But zombie two, who used to be person one, is only 80% full. And so there's been
they're using 20% mass every day or 10%.
Yeah.
Then overall,
there's been no gain,
There's been no gain. So eventually, 3 weeks in, they should still all die.
Yeah.
Unless there's some other...
Well, but you could have a chaining. So zombie one, 2 weeks in, bites person one.
Yeah.
Who then 2 weeks in, bites person two. Who then 2 weeks in, bites person three.
And just to sustain themselves.
Not to sustain themselves, but so zombie one bites person one 2 weeks in and then dies a week later. Right. But... person one, now zombie two.
It's a bit like COVID.
Very much so, very much.
COVID has about a two-week infective rate as well.
Yeah, I need to start making some plans for my flat in Bristol. It was when I was at university, it was quite easy to make these plans because when I was living in college...
Well, it was very easy.
It was pretty much set up.
I mean, they were set up, I'm sure you know this, it was set up to prevent the town folk from rioting.
I thought you were going to say to... prevent against zombie apocalypses. So I was going to get quite excited then.
So the reason all of the Oxford and the old Oxford Cambridge colleges look like castles is because, and they only have one entrance, is because they were afraid that the town folk, the commoners, would riot and are trying to tackle seize the colleges.
Wow. Okay.
So that's why they're so well guarded.
Okay.
So yeah, it is a good place to live.
So the shame is, and again, when I was thinking about it whilst I was in college, the Christchurch Meadows is a fantastic space, but not very defendable because it's open to the river. It's really wide perimeter. So even though in theory that's a really good thing to have, in practice, I definitely would close that gate off and wouldn't, certainly for the first couple months, I wouldn't worry about that. There are lots of cows in the fields though, so we want to get those in.
Why?
To eat.
You eat them instead of the zombies. Can you get zombie cows?
Well, no. So I wouldn't eat a zombie cow. Right, I would get the cows in as a form of farming. So in theory, yes.
Yeah.
In practice,
I don't know what they would do. Just move slower. Just move slightly more.
But also, presumably, would they be interested in eating people? Would they be interested in? They must, if a zombie has tried to bite a cow, then there must be some kind of interest in biting your own species.
Yeah, that's a good point. If a vegan is bitten by a zombie, do they still want meat?
I think by the nature of the fact that it's the virus now which is controlling their actions, I would imagine yes.
Then it should be the same for cows, right? The cows should turn carnivorous.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Carnivorous cows.
Carnivorous cows.
Wow.
So you want to get them in before...
Quickly.
Yeah. Because I don't really... Some of them are pretty big guys. Cows, I think they'd definitely eat me. But yeah, so I sort of made a few plans. And again, it's all about, how can we get water? How can we get people in? How can we use the quads? That kind of thing. And then when I was in the annex, I did the same again. Although truthfully, I think if I was in the annex, I'd just move over to college because it's a more defendable thing.
Mm. Any thoughts on like barricading yourself in a supermarket for weeks?
So supermarkets have lots of entrances.
But they can all be shut, right? Because they're
designed to. They can all be shut, but they're also often glass. Mm. And yes, you can barricade up glass and that's fine. But actually, you then need to be checking way, way, way more. Because the way that I set it up, you basically just need to check two spots. You need two guards checking two spots day and night, maybe a third guard.
Right.
With a supermarket, I think you would be a lot more exposed. You have lots of supplies. Mm. You don't have any means of cooking. You might have plumbing. But I don't know if supermarkets all do have plumbing because like you might not need it. But yeah, I don't think a supermarket. I think often at school, the schools are often good because they often have more gates and walls by the nature of them being schools. But I think a supermarket would be it would be less defendable. It's all payoffs, right?
Mm.
Don't have to scavenge, but you have to spend more of your time defending. Or scavenge less, but you're... No, scavenge more, but you're spending less time defending.
Yeah, sure. The principles of a zombie attack are very intriguing.
There's a lot to go into it.
I feel like this should be your next book.
I think I could definitely write a lot about it. I don't know... Yeah, how to... The ultimate guide to zombie-proofing your house...
Yeah. Well, if any one of you would like a signed copy of that, then check it out on Amazon maybe in
in a few months. Watch this space. It's on its way.
So we start wrapping up. What's your fun fact for the week?
So I was going to mention the fungus.
I scooped you.
You scooped it. But I'll do something completely unrelated. And I think there are a couple lessons to learn from this fact. Well, one key one that I learned. And the fact is that, so according to some research done about 10 years ago, men who wear pink shirts earn more than men who don't wear pink shirts.
Is that why I see you wearing pink shirts every now and then?
I don't have any pink shirts. Oh no, I do have one slightly pink shirt. That is true. So I only saw this recently. And obviously one lesson could be wear more pink shirts. But what I learned was actually, whatever you're trying to research, somehow you'll get funding, because why that's important, I don't know.
They got funding for that?
Well, I mean, I guess they must have had some kind of... Unless they did it all for free, but most researchers are... Either their funding pays for them to live.
Pains me sometimes when our tax dollars go on this quality of research.
Well, thank you, researchers, for answering that question. We were all wondering for a very long time, but now we know.
Interesting. So mine actually relates to a little bit of kind of what we're talking about, which is disasters.
Okay.
And I've kind of told you how even the most intelligent people, when they come up against adversity, can often need systemization or processes drilled into them in order to help them perform efficiently and productively under pressure.
Yep.
So an example is, for example, when there's a cardiac arrest, a patient's essentially died, and you have to try and go and undie them or revive them. And there's lots and lots of causes for why someone may have died, but there's only a few handful of reversible causes. And whilst we can go through each one of them in turn, there are certain sequence of events that need to be done. So even with highly skilled doctors who've been trained for 10 plus years, we still have systems like A, B, C, D, Aries. A is airway, B is breathing, C is circulation, so on.
Sure.
So it just makes you think about, right, if you fix the A, then you fix the B, then you C, fix it, and so on. It goes on to E and F and so on.
Mm.
Well, the same thing is true for disasters.
Mm.
So I think it's the World Health Organization has released like this just massive, massive manual, like hundreds of pages, maybe even 1,000. Essentially, it's a disaster relief manual.
Okay.
So imagine there's a big tsunami and hundreds of people, thousands of people are homeless. They're kind of in these essentially makeshift refugee camps.
Mm.
Or there's, you know, a war or a drought or something.
Mm.
And what this does is all these health organizations, the WHO and the kind of charitable organizations, Red Cross, MSF, they'll all go to and kind of descend in the masses to this location. But of course, if you just descend on there without really, and you've got some supplies, then they can either not be end up being distributed correctly, or they may just end up staying there, or you may bring the wrong supplies, or may not be used efficiently. Or worse, you become homeless yourself because you can't, in the throng of all those people, you can't actually find where you're meant. So you've actually made the problem worse. So they have this manual. The exact name of it escapes me. I think something like the Disaster Relief Manual.
Okay.
But essentially, it goes down to the letter, if there is a flood, then you do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, yeah.
And it goes into a great amount of detail. So for example, if there is a war, then it tells people exactly how many people there should be. There should be 2.1 water pumps for every 3 tents, for example. This is how far each tent should be spaced apart.
Yeah.
This is how the ratios of medicines that need to be given to individuals. This is how far you should have toilets away. This is how many toilets you need for this number of people. So it essentially takes all the thinking out of it, and it just allows you to do execution only. Which is, you know, I mean, it sounds like a really banal concept that would be, it's quite obvious. But actually took a huge amount of research and preparation to actually put those guidelines in place. Yeah. And of course you can adjust them depending on, because it may not foreseen everything.
Hmm.
But what it allows you to do is hit the ground running and just get on with it.
Yeah.
So their training is actually very similar, is they just have to recite these guidelines.
Just go through it.
Yeah.
What page is the zombie apocalypse one?
Well, this is where I think you could add a volume to
And an extra chapter. That'd be good.
Yeah. So even in the darkest times, we have disaster recovery manuals, but something needs adding for next time.
Well, there's a huge gap. But
you know, the other thing that kind of is missing from it, which we've not really ever touched upon, is an alien attack. And governments have their own alien plans.
Yes.
We should probably talk about that in future as well.
So I've never... Do they release their alien plan? Because I know that the US has a government plan.
They get released accidentally. They get leaked every now and then, but I don't think that they do. I mean, there's even the Queen's speech, or the speech that's meant to be given when the Queen passes away, for example. So they all prepare for all these contingencies, as they should. Whether they release them or not is a different story.
I mean, yeah, so, you know, it's good to know that
people
there's a plan, and you know that they've thought ahead for those kind of things. I think that's important. But yeah, alien. I think alien attacks, or well, not even attacks, just alien
appearance. Yeah, I mean, if as soon as we find out we're not alone, I think that'll just
changes everything. Yeah.
There's a really interesting phenomenon in the US where there's always one senator that's not allowed to go into the Senate at any time.
Okay.
Because if the Senate's ever blown up,
okay,
then government continues, for example.
But just on one person?
I think it rotates. So otherwise it would be a really bad job.
Yeah. You're just not used at all until you have all the responsibility of the entire country. Fantastic.
So the idea is that there's always someone left in charge.
So, yeah.
So, but, yeah. Cool. Well, good seeing you.
Awesome. Yeah, likewise.